Senate will please come to order. Reports from standing committees.
February 15, 2018, Mr. President, your committee number 3, to whom was referred Senate File 27, Excise Tax Audits, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Case, Ellis, Peterson, and Wasserberger. No, Senator Kinski. Senator Peterson, Chairman. February 15, 2018, Mr. President, your committee number 2, to whom was referred Senate File 65, State Building Construction Legislative Review, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with the recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Burns, Dockstader, Driscoll, and Landon. No, Senator Hastert. Senator Burns, Chair. February 15, 2018, Mr. President, your committee number 5, to whom was referred Senate File 55, Water Development Account 3, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with a recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Barnard, Emmerich, Hicks, Meyer, and Moniz. Senator Hicks, Chairman. February 15, 2018, Mr. President, your committee number 5, to whom was referred Senate File 62, Omnibus Water Bill Planning, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with a recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Barnard, Emmerich, Hicks, Meyer, and Moniz. Senator Hicks, Chairman. February 15, 2018, Mr. President, your committee number 5, to whom was referred Senate File 64, Appropriation to State Engineer, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Barnard, Emmerich, Hicks, Meyer, and Moniz. Senator Hicks, Chairman. February 16, 2018, Mr. President, your committee number 2, to whom was referred Senate File 18, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with a recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Burns, Dockstader, Driscoll, Hastert, and Landon. Senator Burns, Chairman. February 16, 2018, Mr. President, your committee number 4, to whom was referred Senate File 13, School Facility Property Insurance, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Coe, Ellis, Pappas, Rothfuss, and Wasserberger. Senator Coe, Chairman. February 16, 2018, Mr. President, your committee number 1, to whom was referred Senate File 23, Possession of Non-Platform Marijuana, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with a recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Anselmi Dalton, Christensen, Hicks, Kinski, and Nethercott. Senator Christensen, Chairman. February 16, 2018, Mr. President, your committee number 1, to whom was referred Senate File 24, Court Information Technology Equipment, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with a recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Anselmi Dalton, Christensen, Hicks, Kinski, and Nethercott. Senator Christensen, Chairman. February 16, 2018, Mr. President, your committee number 1, to whom was referred Senate File 25, Corrections Exception to Defense of Habitation Law, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with a recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senator Anselmi Dalton, Christensen, Hicks, Kinski, and Nethercott. Senator Christensen, Chairman. February 16, 2018, Mr. President, your committee number 2, to whom was referred Senate File 45, State Fair Board 2, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Burns, Dockstader, Driscoll, Hastert, and Landon. Senator Burns, Chairman. February 16, 2018, Mr. President, your committee number 1, to whom was referred Senate File 22, Orders of Protection, Revisions, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senator Anselmi Dalton, Christensen, Hicks, Kinski, and Nethercott. Senator Christensen, Chairman.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader, we're at that order. Wait a minute, we have some more messages.
Not yet to that order.
From the House of Representatives, February 16, 2018, message number 111. Mr. President, House Bill number 9, Obsolete Reporting, Department of Workforce Services, has passed the House on third reading in an amended form. Ayes 59, excused 1. Message number 112. Mr. President, House Bill number 27, Continuing Teacher Contracts for Military Spouses, passed the House on third reading in an amended form. Ayes 50, noes 9, excused 1. Message number 113. Mr. President, House Bill number 34, Duplicate Titles, Motor Vehicles, has passed the House on third reading. Ayes 59, excused 1. Signed, Wendy Harding, House Chief Clerk.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader, we're now at that order of business of bills for consideration on general file.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, I'm privileged to the floor before I make that motion.
Yes, you may.
Thank you. Just to let the body, the Senate, know what my thoughts are today, I'd like to get through 31 on the board. I'd like to get through 31 or 310, whichever comes last. So in other words, we'll be here for at least an hour and 10, but if maybe longer if we can't get through Bill 31. We'll stay here long enough to get through Bill 31, which is the Veterans Home. And if we got time to do a few more, we'll do that. Otherwise, that's how we'll conduct the afternoon. Mr. President, with that, I move that the Senate resolve itself in committee of the whole.
You've heard the motion. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion carried. Senator Anderson.
No.
Maybe we could get this to once in 8 years.
Thank you so much. Committee of the Whole will please come to order. First bill for our consideration is Senate File. One of these? Senate File 10. Will a reading clerk please read the bill?
Senate File 10, Utilities Rate Making, sponsored by the Corporations Committee, an act relating to public utilities. It was referred to Committee Number 7, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Case, Nethercott, Pappas, and Scott. Excused, Senator Agar. Senator Case, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Senator Case.
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a due pass recommendation on Senate File 10, Utilities Rate Making. Mr. Chairman, there is a standing committee amendment. I'd ask that it be read in at this time.
Senate File 10, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 2, line 5.
Mr. Chairman, I would move this Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 10 and like to discuss the amendment and the bill. Mr. Chairman, this bill deals with something called the avoided cost calculation, which comes about through a 1978 federal law called the Public Utilities Regulatory Policies Act. In 1978, they were trying to encourage the use of more renewables and more efficient generation in our electric generation process, as well as impose competition, begin to have the first beginnings of competition in the electric utility industry. What the PURPA Regulatory Act required, Mr. Chairman, was that if a utility, if someone wanted to develop a privately built generation facility using either renewable power, which would be solar or wind or possibly some form of hydro, or cogenerated power. Mr. Chairman, what cogenerated power is when you have an industrial process and perhaps you're able to have a ability to generate electricity while you also use the heat from that process to in your manufacturing or other types of process. So it's very efficient. So, Mr. Chairman, what the federal law did in 1978 is say from now on all across the United States that utilities must buy this power. This is the very important point. It's called the must-take aspect, so that if someone developed one of these facilities, they would the utility must purchase it. The federal law specifies that the purchase should be made at least the avoided cost of the utility, or no more than the avoided cost of the utility, Mr. Chairman. And the reason that was done is because utilities have all sorts of options with respect to power. And some of these came in as a good buy for ratepayers, and some of them didn't. But if it was a facility that qualified for the PURPA requirements, which would be 80 megawatts or less, We're not talking about big, giant wind farms or anything. We're talking about smaller projects on the smaller side. Mr. Chairman, a utility had to buy those that power at the avoided cost. Well, what this bill does, Mr. Chairman, is help Wyoming kind of get on track with that, because what's happened in Wyoming is that we haven't really calculated the avoided costs when we set the compensation rate for these types of projects. And as a result, the Wyoming ratepayers have been paying more than they necessarily should for the power from these projects. Now, I also want to point out this is just for the power that's consumed in Wyoming. It has nothing to do with exported power that people in California or Oregon or Washington or elsewhere buy. So this is a product of your interim corporation's work, Mr. Chairman. As you know, we have had a whole series of bills about the electric utility industry, and it'll probably continue into the next interim as well, Mr. Chairman. So that's the gist of what the bill does. If you can, you can see that the kind of the heart of the bill begins on line 14 of page 1, and it says, in setting rates, the commission shall allow the inclusion of purchase power costs from a qualifying facility. And I should point out, if you qualify for this PURPA law, you have a qualifying facility. The rate should be only to the extent that the cost of energy capacity or both in the transaction are determined by the commission to be less than or equal to the utility's avoided cost. That's the key to the bill, everybody, so that a utility doesn't have to pay more than they otherwise would be able to make this power themselves, because they're under the obligation to take the power. They're forced to take it. And, Mr. Chairman, you can see farther on page 2, lines 11 through 17, there's never been a definition of avoided cost in our law for distribution cooperatives or municipalities, for example, in Wyoming that buy power from another generator. So this provides that definition, which wasn't happened. And you can see lines 19 through 22. It says that qualifying facility means a facility that meets the qualification standards used in the federal regulations promulgated under the Federal Public Utility Regulatory Policies Act. Mr. Chairman, that kind of brings us to the amendment. If you'll back up with me again up to that top of page 2, where we talked about they have to use the avoided costs, you can see on line 3 it says that the transactions are determined by the commission to be less than or equal to the utility's avoided cost, considering the cost of energy or capacity from all other available generation sources. That's where the amendment goes, Mr. Chairman, because it was pointed out in the committee, and this is a good catch by the electric utility industry, that sometimes when they are forced to purchase this power, remember, they have to take it, and we're just arguing about the rate, and the purpose of the bill is to make sure that the rate is no higher than the customers would otherwise have to pay. But sometimes when a utility has to connect, they need to upgrade their transmission lines. So an unintended avoided cost of connecting to another facility is that they have to beef up their transmission system. Well, remember, the federal law says we shouldn't pay more than the next best deal for the utility. That's the avoided cost. So included in that, transmission is a good idea. So what this does is on page 2, on line 5, after the word sources, we're going to insert it in there, and the cost of transporting the energy from a qualifying facility to customer load. That just makes it a complete avoided cost calculation, Mr. Chairman. And the last thing I'd like to point out is on lines 5, 6, and 7 of page 2, this subsection shall not be interpreted in a manner inconsistent with the requirements of applicable federal statutes and regulations. We're not reinventing anything with avoided costs, but we are preventing overpayment, because what has happened is that no one has actually used avoided costs in Wyoming in recent years, and they've used a made-up number for a proxy of other renewable energy sources, not the avoided cost that the utility actually has. This requires them to use avoided costs. It'll save ratepayers money, and remember, it only applies to electricity consumed by Wyoming ratepayers. It doesn't have anything to do with the large amount of electricity that's exported. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the time.
Thank you, Senator Case, for the briefing. Senator Raffes?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is on the amendment. We're discussing the cost of transporting energy from a qualifying facility to customer load. And I understand the entire concept here of really trying to make it fair and equitable, but I'm curious who the arbiter is on that decision about transporting the energy and the associated cost, and again, whether that was a required cost or not, based on the idea that, from my understanding, one of the occurrences over recent years that has been taking place is that on customers' bills, there's been a shift from the per kilowatt hour charge to the infrastructure charge, so that on small purchases and on these types of sellback transactions, you end up having to pay less because you're indicating that the infrastructure rates are the high part and the actual power cost is low. So I think this legislation is trying to address a circumstance where you overpay for the price of the electricity, but who is helping to ensure that you're also not underpaying for that cost of electricity, and that this appropriate, and I agree that it's appropriate, avoided cost is a fair and arbitrated avoided cost.
Senator Kinski.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I would have a question for my friend from Lander on the new language in the bill. It's on page 2, lines 5 through 7, where it says, "This subsection shall not be interpreted in a manner inconsistent with the requirements of applicable federal statutes and regulations." Is that sort of like saying this subsection shall be interpreted in a manner consistent with the requirements of applicable federal statutes and regulations?
Good point of order. I'll call him out of order. Yeah.
Allowed leeway to have an open amendment and the bill open when it kind of tracks into the bill. I'm happy to play it either way, but I think that's the chair's call.
Out of order.
Very consistent ruling, Mr.
Yeah. Anyone else on the amendment? Anyone else? Senator Case.
Well, I'll speak to the good senator from Laramie's question, although I'm not entirely sure that I understood it, and we may have to get together a little bit. It is true that on retail bills and throughout the electric utility industry, you have moved towards a situation where there's a payment for capacity and that there's a payment for energy. But oftentimes with facilities that run intermittently, they're not what's called a firm resource that you can rely on. There may not be a capacity payment for something like perhaps wind generation that you can't, so the utility is not paying a capacity payment for that in some instances. If it's a solid facility, they could be paying one, like a cogeneration facility. You know when the plant's running, you can count on that power. So there is that issue. And I wasn't sure completely if you weren't talking about customer bills, because you've all noticed probably that you start getting fixed charges called a customer charge on your bills there. But the point is, either way, rates and contracts are developed, and the arbitrator is the Public Service Commission. They've been arbitrating these rates for years, but to be honest, they have not done it in a manner that actually considered avoided cost. The rates have actually been higher, and as a result, our Wyoming ratepayers have had to pay more. And the Public Service Commission was present at the meeting. Industry was present at the meeting. There was an environmental group represented at the meeting. No one testified against this bill or the amendment. With regard, if I have a small leeway, I think somebody may have a question in the future about whether that's lines 5 through 7 are consistent or inconsistent. And if you're not interpreted in a manner inconsistent, I suppose we could change that to be interpreted in a manner consistent. But what we're saying is we're not reinventing avoided cost. We're not making something up. We're going to follow PURPA, but we're going to tie it down to where it actually covers Wyoming's avoided cost and save our ratepayers money. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Well, yeah, you can answer all those questions you want. Yeah. Okay, on the amendment. Are you ready for the question? All right. All those in favor of Senator Case's motion to adopt the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 10, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, say no. Well, that one clearly failed. That amendment passed. And now we're on the bill. Senate File 10. Senator Bebout.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just the way the language is written, if you talk about the definition of avoided cost, first question is, do we get this from somewhere else? But you could easily have said that the avoided cost really is the distribution costs are the same, whatever they have to do relative to the supplier's avoided cost. Is that a simple way to really look at it, or is there another thing that comes in about the all requirements?
Are there any other questions? Oh, Senator Rothfuss.
And specifically also on the avoided cost definition, I'm curious if this is at any given time or if this is time independent. So if at a given instance of time it's expensive to buy power and I'm buying some local power, is my avoided cost based on that instantaneous cost and then that's what the board looks at, or is it based on some average cost or build cost? Can we get more details on how that's actually going to be calculated and carried out?
Senator Case.
Mr. President, this definition of avoided cost is...
No, I'm actually the chairman.
I'm sorry, but I think you have great potential.
But you can address the president if you'd like.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I'm very sorry. Mr. Chairman, typically these contracts are just a per kilowatt hour contract where everything's rolled into it. Remember, these are kind of on a smaller side, and they're not if they're able to provide power and be dispatchable, then that becomes very valuable, and they might they wouldn't even necessarily need to avoid a cost. They might be able to get a better rate even above it and recognize the fact that they can deliver power when it's needed and not all, when it's not necessarily needed or not. To the good Senator Bebout's question, I was a little confused by that because you mentioned distribution costs, and I'm thinking this would be transmission costs, really the heavy. So part of the extra cost of getting power from point A to point B, that was the purpose of the amendment, because sometimes to connect one of these systems to, they're supposed to connect to the transmission line, but sometimes you have to upgrade the transmission line. But I think it's all the costs that the utility would incur to otherwise bring in a utility resource. And I'd love to get with you more if I have not understood your question completely.
Question on the bill. All those in favor of Senator Case's motion that when the cow rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 10, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, say no. Senate File 10 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 58. Yes. I'll try, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. Would the reading clerk please read Senate File 58?
Senate File 58, Game and Fish Licenses, sponsored by Senator Pappas, an act relating to game and fish licenses, was referred to Committee Number 6, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Anselmi Dalton, Barnard, Boner, Emmerich, and Moniz. Senator Emmerich, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Senator Emmerich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a recommendation of do pass.
for Senate File 58. There is an amendment. Could I ask that be read in?
Senate File 58, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 1, line 10.
Mr. Chairman, I also move that amendment, and I yield to Senator Pappas.
Senator Pappas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ladies and gentlemen of the body, I bring to you a bill that you saw last year. This is pretty much identical to last year. It passed the Senate and just timed out in the House and never got heard over there. Bringing it back, it's a bill relating to the game and fish licenses, basically amending provisions that are related to license expirations. Presently, all licenses are set in statute regarding their expiration date. What this bill does, it allows the Game and Fish Commission to actually set those expiration dates by rule and regulation. And the reason behind this bill is twofold. I think it's a great bill for the consumer, for the sports public. Right now, many licenses, like a bird license or a small game license or a fish license, expires on December 31st, no matter when you take it out. You could take it out the week before, and it's only good for a week. So what this bill is intending to do is to allow the Game and Fish to set many of those licenses to become a 365-day license. That is very convenient for the sportsman. Not only is it convenient for the sportsman, it is going to be convenient for the department as well. In fact, the Game and Fish, looking at other states that allow 365-day licenses, they find that their ability to offer online renewal, even automatic renewal, is available to them when they do this. Right now, if you buy a license and it expires December 31st, a lot of times you won't buy it till you go fishing again in July. With this provision, the Game and Fish really would like to notify people when the expiration date's coming up, give them the option to renew online, and it's easy for everyone. And the reason why we haven't gone in here and set requirement for a 365-day license is because not every license is required or should have a 365-day license. There are many licenses, too, that span a year. In other words, there may be a season that would span two different years through the November to February time frame. And so it was just much cleaner to let the commission deal with each particular license and its expiration date through rule and regulation. I won't go through the entire bill line by line. If you look in there, you'll see many in many locations.
Senator Pappas, I think we're on the amendment.
Oh, we're on the amendment?
Yeah.
Okay. The amendment basically, thank you, Mr. Chairman. There's two things that this amendment does. First thing it does is if you look on line 10 of the amendment, we are inserting a section called Hunting Restrictions to Establish Seasons License Requirement Exceptions. The reason why we're inserting this is because there is a license in Title 23, Chapter 5, that deals with special bird licenses. There is no such thing as a special bird license anymore. And what that does is it deletes the word special from 108 and then all the other sections below that. From 10 on down is just basically trying to bring us in conformance with the present practice. There's only a bird license. There's no special bird license anymore. And then the other deletion on line one, if you'll see, we're deleting 23.2.4.14b. And the reason we're deleting that is because that particular section is really not governed by the commission. That's governed by the Board of Outfitters. And the Board of Outfitters want to leave their license expiration dates at December 31st. So that section is being removed. And then you'll find that on page 3, line 20, and on page 4 through line 6. So that's the amendment. And the two parts of that amendment. I'd stand for questions on the amendment.
Okay, question on the amendment. Question on the amendment. Question has been called for. All those in favor of Senator Emmerich's motion to adopt the Standing Committee Amendment number 1 to Senate File 58, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Amendment carried. Now we're back on the bill.
Mr. Chairman, I think I've probably explained the bill well enough. Unless there's questions on the bill, I'd ask for your favorable consideration.
Any questions on the bill? Sensing the body's ready to vote, all those in favor of Senator Emmerich's motion that the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 58, say aye. All opposed, say no. Motion carries. Senate File 58 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 68.
Senate File 68, Amendments to Agency Plans and New Program Review 2, sponsored by the Management Audit Committee, an act relating to state agency planning, was referred to Committee Number 12, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Bebout, Hastert, Perkins, Rothfuss, and Von Flatern. Senator Bebout, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Senator Bebout.
Chairman, I move the Committee Hall Riding Report do with a favorable recommendation that Senate File
68
do pass and would yield to Senator Hastert, I believe, or Senator Rothfuss, we're going to carry this bill.
Which one would you like?
Senator Kinski.
Oh, yeah, there's lots of them raising their hands. Senator Kinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This bill brought to you by the Management Audit Committee addresses a section of Wyoming statute that is kind of laying dormant for a while and is kind of on autopilot with some actions that it specifies. And the purpose of this bill is to preserve the intent of the statute while excising those portions that have just generated some unnecessary work for agencies and this body. So the story of this particular statute, 28-1-115, goes back to 1993, when at the behest of the then governor, the legislature adopted an edict under Section A-1 that said by no later December 1 of 94 of that year, every agency was to maintain a statement of policies and authority to guide their programs, activities, and functions. The plan was to specify all their goals and objectives against which they would be measured. And that was a noble effort, and it was undertaken, and not evidently since. Then in subsection double Romanet I, which is the section before us, it went on to say that as required by the governor or by the legislature in a budget bill or other enactment thereafter. Well, there hasn't been a requirement thereafter. So there's two things that are going to happen here. The first is striking in a budget bill or other enactment, trying to get back to the constitutional requirement that we not do so much through the budget bill and do it through a separate piece of legislation. So in a budget bill or other enactment will be excised. The second part is, again, under Romanet double I, subsection A, there was a requirement that the performance measures shall be developed by the agency and reviewed by the Legislative Management Audit Committee every year. This is on page 2 of the bill, lines 15 through 16. To the extent that that's happened, it's not been particularly enlightening, and probably it hasn't been happening. So that will be excised, and instead what we shall say is, as is indicated in line 17 and so forth, that the performance measures shall be reviewed by the Legislative Management Audit Committee as required by the Management Council or as required by the Management Audit Committee, or as required by Management Council on request of the governor, or if the legislature requires that review by law. And the reason that's been done is the review has been required every single year. It's a report that comes out and goes into a drawer, and I think my friend the senator from Bates Creek said that to his knowledge, in his time here, nobody's ever actually read the report. So this would make still keep this performance goals and objectives idea on the books, but make the report only obligatory when somebody invokes it, such as the governor or this body. With that, I would urge the body's favorable consideration, Senate File 68. Thank you, Mr.
Any other discussion on Senate File 68? Sensing the body's ready to vote, all those in favor of Senator Bebout's motion that when the committee of the whole rises to report, that it do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 68, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, say no. That Senate File 68 has passed the committee of the whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 11.
Senate File 11, Public Utility Regulation Joint Powers Entities, sponsored by the Corporations Committee, an act relating to public utilities, was referred to Committee Number 7, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Case, Nethercott, Pappas, and Scott. Senator Agar excused. Senator Case, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Senator Case.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, that it do so with a due pass recommendation on Senate File 11, Public Utility Regulation, Joint Powers Entities. This, again, is a product of the interim work of your Corporations Committee. It has its genesis in a bill brought by Senator Burns last year with regard to trying to help get some small communities in his district have natural gas service. So what the bill does, Mr. Chairman, is it broadens an exclusion from public utility regulation that's in our law. The gist of it is this. If you're a municipal government, you can provide utility services within the boundary of your municipality, and you can do that and not be regulated by our Wyoming Public Service Commission. We have, of course, gas, electric, and water. I don't know of any gas utilities, but we do have many municipalities that provide electric service, and, of course, you know, all know about water. Mr. Chairman, they could also provide gas service under that same deal. But the exclusion, within the exclusion, it has a double exclusion, Mr. Chairman. And the situation is that exclusion only applies to where they serve within the boundaries of the municipality. Frequently, municipal utilities will extend to people outside the municipality. It's common practice. It makes sense to let them do that. But the people that have the power or water, whatever extended to them, are protected under our law by having the Wyoming Public Service Commission approve the rates for the amount of the extension. Are you with me so far? So you can have a town and the city sets the rates on the inside, but they have to go to the Public Service Commission for electric power rates and an extension into an outside area to people that aren't in the town. And the reason for that is simple. The people outside the boundary of the municipality don't elect the people in the municipality, and you can imagine a situation where there would be a tendency to overcharge the people outside the town. That's the existing law. That's stated the existing law. All this bill does is to take that same concept and apply it to joint powers boards made up of municipalities, and that's all it does. So that it, within the boundary, if you have a joint powers board, again, within the boundaries of the municipalities involved in the joint powers board, unregulated. If they go outside those boundaries, they'd be regulated. Now, a joint powers board could also be formed with another type of entity, another public entity, perhaps a water utility district or something like that, and that territory would be included as well. And that's all the bill does. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions on Senate File 11? Senator Kinski.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. And my question for my good friend from Lander focuses on the idea that this joint powers board formed by these, in the case we know of, is two towns, why they cannot serve outside their corporate boundaries without going first to the Public Utility Commission. And the reason that I ask is because in the particular situation that this bill would address, the utilities that could serve these communities have refused to extend service on any kind of viable basis. And so to make the business case, these communities really need to not just serve the people inside those two towns, but everybody along a line getting to the towns who would like to have natural gas service. And so my great concern is that even though the utilities won't serve them, about the time these two towns say, we want to serve in your current monopoly area, that there'll be a great protest at the Public Utility Commission, and they lack the resources to really be able to fight back to these utilities. Why do we not simply say that they can serve outside their corporate boundaries if they have asked an existing utility that does serve the area to serve, and they have to decline to do so on any kind of economic basis? Why are we forcing these communities to go back to the PUC again? Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any other questions on Senate File 11? Senator Case?
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I would like to just remind the Senate that right now the state of the law is that if they provide service within their municipal boundaries, where those customers elect decide their leaders, there is no regulation by the Public Service Commission. It only applies outside the boundaries. And it prevents a situation where the people setting the rates can set the rates for the group inside the municipality at a higher or a lower level than the people outside the municipality, Mr. Chairman. And sometimes rates being higher are justified because it costs more money to serve outside. Now, Mr. Chairman, let's start at the top on this. The public utility regulating those rates, they've done it for a long, long time. They're very good at it. It's not as onerous as it's actually been made out to be. And the Public Utility Commission is willing to work with utilities to serve in those situations. That's the first point. The second point is those two municipalities that don't have contiguous boundaries can form a larger area in their joint powers board if they do so with another entity. The proposal that came to the committee was to have that other entity be a school district, Mr. Chairman. And it was discussed in the committee, and the committee felt that the school district maybe is kind of an arbitrary grab, and that a school district doesn't necessarily have a public utility function, and it's kind of creating this fiction to have two municipals, then a school district, and then have this joint powers board made up of all three entities setting the rates for the area. So we added the language that says that the whoever the partner entity is has to have an underlying connection to utility service as a basic function. I don't know in our law that school districts are authorized to provide utility services, but a water district would be a perfect example. And people could form a water district or form a natural gas district. Well, form a water district, and that's a utility function. Mr. Chairman, it also, in the committee, we had the Wyoming Association of Municipalities. I believe weather prevented the folks from the two communities in Wyoming to come down. But we also had representatives of that utility that we're talking about. And that utility was very positive about the ability to cooperate and allow those entities to serve in that territory. Very cooperative. And so I don't really think we've got a big problem here. I think this will probably work out. And I look forward to the resolution, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, and not only was the utility that had the certificated territory sounding very cooperative, there's good commercial reason for them to sound that way, because they expect to be the supplier of gas to this joint powers board. It's just not economical for them to go in and put in the lines and serve those customers. It really did sound like this was going to solve the locals' problems, and that once we pass this bill, they'll be able to proceed.
Senator Kinski.
Mr. Chairman, thank you, and I appreciate learning about what have been protracted deliberations within the committee and within these communities from my good friends on the committee. And I would simply suggest for consideration, were we to contemplate amending this, that the positive attitude of the utility involved, its dawn really began when these communities decided to form the Joint Powers Board. And once they decided that the negotiations with the utility were really not fruitful, they formed their own Joint Powers Board, after which the utility kind of sat up straight and combed its hair. So let's go back to that. Let's carry further the analogy or the water service within the city boundaries and sewer or garbage. And I'm familiar with all those as a former mayor. And how would the gentleman feel about a joint powers board that included the county as one of the entities, and that the rate setting for the utility had to go through the county commissioners? Under that scenario, the ratepayers outside the corporate boundaries of the towns are represented by people for whom they vote. And I'd add they don't vote for the representatives on the Public Utility Commission. It's not an elected office. And there is precedent for that. If we look at water, for instance, towns can supply water. And in my community, the town has formed a joint powers board with the county. And we supply not only the boundaries inside the city, but areas outside the city with county residents. And the county has to approve the rates for the county residents, and the city has to approve the rates for the city residents. So it works. It works. And I'm wondering, why can we not do the same thing here with natural gas rather than force these folks to go back to the Public Utility Commission? Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Case?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Our counties and our cities have different powers under Wyoming law. Cities, of course, are home rule entities. They typically provide utility services. I don't know of any counties that are providing utility services or whether they're prohibited or authorized. I would say that the powers given to cities are kind of expansive, and the powers given to counties are more contracted if we looked into it. But we can look into it. The key is the existing language says on lines 10, continuing down line 12, it's a joint powers entity whose individual member entities are authorized by law to provide utility service. So it's, I can think of improvement districts that probably would be authorized, water district that would be authorized. I don't know if a county is an entity authorized to provide utility service. Certainly ask the opinion of the good lawyers around here, Mr. Chairman. It could work. I'm not necessarily saying no, and it could potentially be a solution.
Are you ready for the question? Sensing the Senate is ready for the question, all those in favor of Senator Case's motion that when the committee of the whole rise to report, that it do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 11, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign, or no sign. Senate File 11 has passed the committee of the whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 46. The reading clerk will please read this bill.
Senate File 46, Elections, Notices, and Resolutions, sponsored by Senator Case, an act relating to elections, was referred to Committee Number 7, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Case, Nethercott, Pappas, Scott, and Scott. Noes, excused, Senator Agar, Senator Nethercott, acting chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Senator Nethercott.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move for Senate File 46, and I move the standing committee amendment, number 1, to Senate File 46. And for explanation, I will defer to Senator Case.
Senator Case.
Mr. Chairman, thank you very much. Mr. Chairman, this is a continuation of the committee's interim work in the election area. We actually kind of ran out of time. We had the association that represents our collective of Wyoming County clerks were bringing forth some of my ideas, but they didn't have them completely ready for our last meeting. So the co-chairman and I agreed to bring the bill on their behalf, and so that's what you see here, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, so this is a bill, Senate File 46, about election notices and resolutions. We'll go and we'll just talk about what it does. If you, it goes into a number of areas of election law and deals mostly with publication requirements and actually makes them more uniform and more generous and for so that people have more notice. So I'll be real quick about this, Mr. Chairman. Page 2, lines 22 to 29, 109B, this makes publication of the proclamation for the general election earlier prior to the candidate filings so that potential candidates know what offices are even available to file for. That seems important. And that potential candidates know the criteria of filing contribution and expenditure reports. If you go down to 22, 29, 109B, Romanet 2, this makes proclamations for the primary include offices that will be up on the general election so that there's no need to publish them twice. You've got to catch them both at the same time. Page 3, 22, 21, 103, this provides for the notice of a bond election. That they all have different periods, so this will make them consistent. One now is 60 days, one is 7, and the other is 110. This will make them all 110-day notice, consistency across. So, you know, when clerks get short timelines like 60 or 70 days, it's a very short amount of time to get ballots designed and printed and ready to deliver 40 days out for absentee voters. Remember, they got to be ready that far in advance. So then they also have to line up polling places. There's just a lot they have to do. And the 110 days is going to make it all better. Page 4, lines 22, 20, sections 22, 21, 104. This says that the bond election notice of an election is currently published 30 to 40 days out. This really needs to be put in earlier to put the public on notice earlier, and it needs to be consistent with the publication requirements elsewhere in the bill. Jumping to page 6, 22, 29, 110A. This makes the timing of the publications of proclamations earlier so that they're published with other notices for the same election and consistent. Again, you hear the consistent time and wise when the election is held on its own. Page 7, 22, 29, 110B. This, we've got to change this one. The current language has the special district candidates filing for election 30 to 39 days out. That's past the period when clerks already have to have the absentee ballots ready. So we've got to make it, you know, it's not workable. So we must, so it's obviously we have to, candidates must file earlier to allow time for the design and printing and delivery of ballots. Mr. Chairman, pages 8 and 9, section 35.2.404. We may have made a mistake a couple of years ago. I know it probably never, ever happens, but the legislature changed. Notice I said the legislature, maybe not the Corporations Committee, but the legislature changed the initiation of formation of a special hospital district from petition only to resolution from the commissioners only. And I think that was really an inadvertent thing. So this changes it back so it's as it was, being petition or resolution, Mr. Chairman. That is the bill. Does somebody have a copy of the amendment handy? The good chairman, acting chairman of the Corporations Committee.
Point of order. Miss Senator Bebel. Ben, would you please read
it? Not yet. Not yet.
Mr. Chairman, I respectfully ask that that be read in.
Yes, thank you.
Senate File 46, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 2, line 21.
Mr. Chairman, I would move Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 46. You can see the change here is on page 2, line 21. After the word expenditures, it inserts not previously included in the proclamation published pursuant to subsection A of this section. So that's actually what this is it catches expenditures that weren't already disclosed, Mr. Chairman. Finally, this page 10, we delete the clause and we insert that the act is effective immediately, Mr. Chairman. That is the amendment. I ask for your favorable consideration.
Any
Discussion on the amendment. Discussion on the amendment. Sensing the vote, body's ready to vote. All in favor of Senator Nethercott's motion to adopt the Standing Committee Amendment number 1 to... Are you sure? Well, okay then. It's been read in.
I did move it. I suspect it may have been moved twice, but two motions is better than none. I think we can still vote on it.
I think Senator Nethercott moved it before you moved it.
Mr. Chairman,
yes.
On a point of order.
Okay. Oh, okay. Well, I stand corrected then. Okay. You are ready for the question. All those in favor of Senator Case's motion to adopt the Standing Committee Amendment number 1 to Senate File 46, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion carries. The amendment carries. We're back on the main bill.
Question on the bill.
Yeah, and all those in favor of Senator Nethercott's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 46, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. That motion, Senate File 46, has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our... Yes, I am. Oh, yes.
Have privilege of the floor.
Senator Coe.
Thank you. In the balcony back here, we got a really special individual who's with Megan Degenfelder from the Department of Education. And I want to introduce Shannon Hill, physical education and health teacher at Tamaulipas Middle School and Wyoming's 2017 Milken Educator Award winner. The last Milken winner in Wyoming was 9 years ago. And only 44 award winners were selected in the nation. Shannon has redesigned the school's PE classes, which now include cross-curricular activities like bike rides to a nearby grocery store to purchase fresh ingredients for cooking lessons, complete with nutritional analysis. 80 miles from my community is Tamaulipas. Please welcome Shannon Hill. This is really a special deal.
Yeah.
Welcome. Welcome to the Senate, Shannon. And we're back on Senate File 31. Would you read that in, please?
Senate File 31, Veterans Skilled Nursing Center, sponsored by the Transportation Committee, an act relating to veterans, was referred to committee number 8, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Agar, Anderson, Baldwin, and Meyer. Senator Christensen excused. Senator Meyer, chairman, was re-referred to committee number 2, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Burns, Dockstader, Driscoll, Hastert, and Landon. Senator Burns, chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee in whole of the Whole rise and report, it do so with a do-pass motion on Senate File 31, Veterans Skilled Nursing Center. And I would draw the body's attention to a handout out here. It's a couple of colored pages there. It's got the basically the executive summary of what the bill is. And then on the other pages that you'll see here, is the amount of veterans that are in the area from 2015 projected to 2030. And that kind of gives you an idea about where some of the vets are in our surrounding area. Mr. Chairman, let's start with this bill. Essentially, it's is to create a skilled nursing center for veterans in the state and their spouses. And I'll go through the bill fairly fast. On page 2, this is the qualifications there. It's an honorably discharged vet or a member of the National Guard disabled while on duty. You may have a spouse in there on page 2. It's also the mission of a Gold Star, non-veterans. And for those of you that need a refresher on that, that's persons are qualified dependents or parents of the United States military personnel who died in service or died as a result of their service. So they're also qualified in that. The Department of Health is going to run this thing and kind of steer the process, and they might, by contract, they're going to go through and we're going to have a study. And we're going to study things such as the staffing requirements and whether or not there's a need for it. Those things have to be looked after to make sure that the VA will qualify for a grant. And that's the big part of this thing, is you're going to get a 65% grant, and the bill asks for a 35% loan. If you look at what's going to actually be built, it's going to be over on page 5, and that's a greenhouse look-alike community living concept. The size of this is going to be determined by the study. It can go up to 58 beds. The loan right now is contemplated at 24. So at this point in time, we don't know exactly what the size it is. The 24 was a kind of a best guess scenario by the Veterans Affairs and the Military Department, along with the Department of Health. So we're going to go through the that process. The contract awarded is going to be by competitive bids. And we have an amendment, a couple of them here. I'd ask that the reading clerk move them at this point in time. They're going to go a little bit out of order because we're on page 5. We've got the first one. It'll be the Standing Committee Amendment 1, if the reading clerk would read that in.
Senate File 31, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 5, line 20.
Mr. Chairman, I would move adoption of Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 31. Ask for your favorable consideration. On page 5, line 20, this is an area where it says the State Construction Department shall, by contract or otherwise, provide for maintenance. We felt that the construction department necessarily didn't have to sweep the floors, so we inserted major maintenance. Maintenance is provided later on in the bill, so it's not like maintenance isn't going to occur. It takes place later on, and it's just major maintenance. The other area was something that on page 17, line 20 and 21, is something that staff wanted to do. We were setting the interest rate, and there's two areas there. One was the pooled interest rate or a fund to be determined by the treasurer. Staff said, well, let's kind of tighten that up because we really can't profile or put a fiscal note out, because if you don't know what the fund is, you don't know what the interest rate is going to be. So they suggested that we take out the flexibility perhaps a different fund, and just leave it with the pooled funds. And so with that, I'd ask for questions on the amendment. Seeing none, Mr. Chairman, I'd call for a question on the amendment.
Sensing the body's ready to vote, all those in favor of Senator Meyer's motion to adopt the Standing Committee Amendment of the Whole Number 1 to Senate File 31, Standing Committee, right? Oh, did I say committee, though? Oh, I'm sorry. All those in favor of Senator Meyer's motion to adopt the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 31, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion carries.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I'll go briefly into the methods and how the monies go, and they're set up an account over on page 7. It's a special revenue account. That's where the grant money from the VA will go, and any other donations. the Department of Health or the Veterans Commission or the State Construction Department may accept monies on behalf of the state. It all ends up in the special revenue account, and you can pay costs of design, planning, construction, operation, and maintenance of the Veterans Skill Facility from that, and that's where we catch up with the regular maintenance is on page 7. Moving on, we've got some conforming amendments coming up from page 8 and forward, just adding the Veterans Skilled Nursing Center to the list of things that's under the Department of Health. You go over on page 9, there's a fishing permit that other facilities get under the Department of Health. This adds the Veterans Skilled Nursing Center there. And the other part is over on page 10, where, again, we just established the institution along with the rest of the institutions, and this is the last on the list, which is Wyoming's Veterans Skilled Nursing. Then, Mr. Chairman, you get into the details of what the Skilled Nursing Center is as far as the commission and what the planning, the 1, 2, and 3 levels are, and that's the mission, the use, the operation, including staffing requirements. The staffing requirements is important for two reasons, to make sure that it doesn't interfere or impact local private industry that's in this area to the least extent possible, and also for qualifying for the VA grant, as well as the population served and services offered that has to do with the VA grant, too. You go on and look at the try to determine the number of beds, which we've talked about, the capital construction requirements, the site and location. The study is going to determine that. And we're going to try to fast-track that. And if you want to read all of the different studies that we've already had before, they're numerous. Over the course of the last several years and decades, and many of you have been on those different studies and are well aware of what they are. If you need to read those, you certainly can take a look at those. So, Mr. Chairman, you get to Section 5. This is the area where we ask for $5 million for the match at 35%, whichever is less. And I think with that, Mr. Chairman, that kind of says what we need to do. Now, we do have a committee of the whole amendment, and I'd ask the reading clerk read that in at this time.
Senate File 31, Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1, page 13, line 6.
Okay, this goes into the study there. We've had a little discussion that we should probably expand it out a little bit, specifically considering existing state-owned and other facilities. There's some other facilities that are out there. We've had some discussion about the basin facility that might be able to do this a little more cost-effectively if we look
Senator at Meyer,
some of them.
Would you move that amendment, please?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I would move committee the whole amendment number 1 to Senate File 31.
Thank you.
Yeah. And so with that, Mr. Chairman, I think that's relatively well explained. To make sure that we cover all of our bases, I ask for either a question on that or an aye vote.
Is there any other discussion on the Committee of the Whole Amendment? Sensing the body's ready to vote, all those in favor of Senator Meyer's motion to adopt the Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1 to Senate File 31, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Same sign? Okay, we're back on the main bill.
Right. Mr. Chairman, I want to briefly touch on the position that's in this bill. I was told by our Veterans Commission representative that I believe it was Kentucky has 4 of these skilled nursing facilities, and the one person actually across the state looks after all 4 of them. It's a requirement of the VA that you have 1 Department of Health or 1 state employee overseeing it. And so although that we have it in there that we may require one, I think because of that particular situation that I heard about in Kentucky, we may be able to do it with existing personnel that's already there. There's several states out there that have these. Wyoming is the last, I think all of them but Wyoming has a skilled nursing facility. And so we're going to move up to the top of the list as far as funds that are available. We'll see how many beds that we can actually afford or put in or what it looks like. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I guess the tall senator from Natrona County has a question.
Senator Scott?
Mr. Chairman, as I read this, Section 5 is, that says authorized to borrow the money. That's the match. This is the last we'll see of it. This bill is going to authorize actual construction of the building. And that's a $5 million decision. I will compliment the sponsors on its creative. Instead of asking for an appropriation, you ask for a loan. It doesn't look near as fierce. It is a creative piece of work here. I'm going to ask anybody in the committee, or if it went to committee two, because we really are appropriating money out of the LSRA here, even though it's called authorizing a loan. What does anybody know? What rate will be required to meet the operating expenses and pay the loan back in any reasonable time? And how does that compare with the rates at other institutions?
Go ahead. Yeah, Bruce.
Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, the bill was re-referred to number two, appropriations. The rate is the same as the interagency pool rate, which I believe is 1.2 or 1.5, something like that. And the loan, as I understand it, is on a 15-year amortization schedule.
Senator Scott. Mr. Chairman, that's very enlightening as to what we're doing here. I probably didn't adequately ask the question. What is the rate that is going to be charged to the veterans that come occupy this? How much are they going to pay? And how is that going to compare with competing skilled nursing facilities?
Senator Meyer.
Thank you. 75% or up to 25% can be non-veterans in the home, and that's going to be similar to your other nursing centers in the state. Now, the other folks that are 70% disabled vets, the rate is going to be substantially higher. And I guess I could have passed that out, but I got the copies of what those rates are here. I'll just say that the neighboring states in the rural areas are receiving between $378.82 and $416.69 in per diem for 70% or greater disabled veterans. They've done the cash flow, and it's going to be more than adequate with the rates that are with those 70% to go ahead and pay it off. And it can get up for on short-term rehabilitation when you get Medicare in there. That actually bounces up to $550 a day. And that's the same as probably very close to what other facilities have. It's you get that 100-day Medicare increase. It's a situation where we're the last state to do this. Other states model it the same way, and so, Mr. Chairman, we know that we're going to be paying that loan back. So we're not actually, it is a big difference between borrowing it and just say, give me a grant, a state grant. So, it's going to get paid back.
Senator Burns,
Mr. Chairman. The body should also probably know this was a question I had on when our committee looked at it. I thought, okay, we're getting $5 million here, and that's 35% of it, and the feds are supplying 65%, and that gives you whatever the figure is, $13 million or something like that. And so I thought, well, that was going to, you could directly relate that to how many beds you were going to have. But the director of Department of Health, who will be part of studying this, part of the study is to see what the needs of the veterans here in Wyoming are. And it can go anything from just basically an old age home in which they could have more beds, or they need to basically do a census to see how many of the veterans are badly disabled, in which case they're going to need more intensive care, which would be fewer beds, and therefore the rate would also be higher. So the answer to the question of the chairman of Labor and Health is, I don't know. And it depends.
Senator Landon.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Just to add to what our chairman of Appropriations stated, I spoke with the Department of Health director, and he also indicated, as did the military department, that renovations would be considered in this study and would be reimbursable by the federal government. So I just throw that in the mix, and he said it's very appropriate that be considered as well in this study as we go forward. I thought that would be of interest. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I will confess I'm somewhat nervous about this bill, and one of the reasons is that a number of years ago, not too many, but I don't remember exactly how many, there was a previous survey, and what they found was that the veterans largely preferred to go in nursing homes closer to where they lived because they were, they're closer to family and they saw more family and better supports. And I'm really wondering whether we're going to recover enough from this, whether there's enough demand, whether the costs are right, as to whether we're ever going to get this loan repaid.
Senator Meyer.
Well, let me ease the good senator's concerns from the central part of the state. The simplest way to look at it, that if the worst case scenario, if you want to look at it, is that you build this thing up in the Buffalo Sheridan area, and the home that's in Buffalo right now, as those folks need to move into a facility that has higher skills necessary for them as they get more disabled, then they can move into the skilled nursing facility, and that one institution there alone is a sufficient size to at the 24 bed size to fulfill all of that. So, you know, the notion that we're, you know, that's why we have the handout there. You're looking at 200 or 300 folks that are going to be 70% disabled. And so you're talking about 58 beds at the maximum, in which case they'd have to come in for an increase in the loan, or 24 beds if it's as it is now. So that's 24 is less than 10% of the population of people that are 70% disabled. So the amount of people that are there, definitely you're going to be able to fill this up. So there's no problem with having an occupancy rate that's insufficient. Now, we can do less than skilled, as a good senator from Casper also mentioned. It's a different reimbursement rate from the government. We can pay at the 70% because it has a much higher disability rate for 70% disabled. But the ones that are just domiciliary, you can't quite make it work at the 65%. You may would have to go to a longer amortization if you wanted to do it this way. Other states have probably done that, but this is probably right now where the need really is and where we need to concentrate at this time.
Other discussion on Senate File 31. Senator Dockstetter.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. tracking it, the loan, it's federal, we got federal health care programs. Is there anything here in the fine print that I'm missing that it ends up, that the state's picking up the tab on anything?
Senator Meyer.
No, Mr. Chairman. In fact, if everything goes sideways, there's a provision in there that all the money comes back to the LSRA after any federal obligation is met. So, you know, we've looked at it, with that in mind, that if everything we look at and make a determination that we're good to go on this thing and it doesn't work, essentially the state's got first lien on, second lien after the federal government and everything, and it's a brand new facility. I'm sure that you can probably sell it back for a lot more than 35% of what the cost is. So we're if we could make loans like this every day, we should be making them every day, Mr. Chairman.
Any other discussion? Any other discussion on Senate File 31? Sensing the body's ready to vote, all those in favor of Senator Meyer's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 31, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. That motion or that bill, Senate File 31, has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our recommendation.
Monday.
Okay. Senator Perkins. Oh, I thought I had it on. Sorry.
You want me to say that again, Mr.
There it
Chairman?
Is.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move the committee the whole rise and report.
You've heard the motion, yep.
Aye.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Same sign. That motion carried. Mr.
Not same sign.
Is that it? Oh, okay. I got some more on here. Ah!
Reading clerk, please read the Committee of the Whole report.
Mr. President, your Committee of the Whole, having had under considerations bills on general file, begs leave to report as follows. Senate File 10, do pass amended. Senate File 58, do pass amended. Senate File 68, do pass. Senate File 11, do pass. Senate File 46, do pass amended. Senate File 31, do pass amended. Senator Anderson, Chairman.
Senator Anderson.
Mr. President, I move the adoption of the Committee of the Whole report.
You've heard the motion. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion carried. That report is adopted. We have standing committee reports.
February 16, 2018, Mr. President, your committee number 10, to whom was referred Senate File 75, Biological Products Pharmacies, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with a recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Baldwin, Boner, Bouchard, Peterson, and Scott. Senator Scott, Chairman. February 16, 2018, Mr. President, your committee number 10, to whom was referred Senate File 43, Organ Donation, Training, and Timely Post-Mortem Examinations, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Baldwin, Boner, Bouchard, Peterson, and Scott. Senator Scott, Chairman. February 16, 2018, Mr. President, your committee number 10, to whom was referred Senate File 95, Medicare Discrimination, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Baldwin, Boner, Bouchard, Peterson, and Scott. Senator Scott, Chairman. February 16, 2018, Mr. President, your committee number 10, to whom was referred Senate File 41, Organ Donation Promotion Task Force, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Baldwin, Boner, Bouchard, Peterson, and Scott. Senator Scott, Chairman.
Senator Scott.
Mr. President, Senate File 95, Medicare Discrimination, that was just read in, has an appropriation. I ask pursuant to Senate rules that it be re-referred to committee number 2.
Without objection, that is so ordered, be re-referred to committee number 2, appropriations. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, I believe that clears my desk.
Well, I'm happy to hear that, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move that we stand adjourned until 10 a.m. Monday, February the 19th.
Announcement, Senator Coe.
Mr. President, your committee number 4, Education, will meet Monday morning at 8 o'clock, Jonah Room S-19. To take back up Senate File 96, Early Childhood Education. Senate File 87, Hathaway Scholarship Eligibility. Senate File 93, Child Sexual Abuse Education and Prevention. And Senate Joint Resolution 4, Public School Financing.
Senator Scott.
Mr. President, your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, will meet Monday, February 19th at 8 a.m., Jonah Room, S-27. Consider Senate File 78, Opioid Task Force, Opioid Addiction Task Force, Senate File 83, Controlled Substance Prescription Tracking, Senate File 85, Certificate of Nonviable Birth, and, if time permits, Senate File 91, Government Contracts Labor Organization.
Senator Emmerich.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your committee travel number 6 will meet Tuesday at 8 a.m., Jonah Room, L-54. That's why I'm giving kind of a heads up, because there is a room change to consider Senate File 99, State Fair Horse Racing Events, Senate File 110, Paramutual Event Horse Racing Account. Thank you.
Senator Christensen.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your Judiciary Committee number 1 will meet Monday, February 19th, 8 a.m., Jonah Room, S-18, to consider the following bills: SF-80, Vulnerable Adults, SF-86, DUI Recidivism Reduction, SF-94, Tobacco Use Non-Discrimination Repeal, and SF-66, Volunteer Health Care.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, your Committee number 8, Transportation, will meet immediately upon adjournment in Senate File 27 to consider the following bills: Senate File 60, Wyoming Women's Suffrage Pathway Highway Designation; Senate File 84, Motor Vehicle Registration Deployed Military Members; Senate File 92, Electronic Logging Devices Enforcement. Thank you.
Thank you,
Mr. Vice President.
Thank you, Mr. President. Number 9, your committee number 9, Minerals and Economic Development, will meet Monday the 19th, 30 minutes after noon recess in Jonah Room, S-18, to consider Senate File 79, Vertical Takeoff and Landing Aircraft Regulations; Senate File 56, Real Property as a Collateral Bond; and Senate File 100, Economic Diversification Broadband Services.
Mr. President, your committee number 2, Appropriations, will hold an informal meeting on Sunday at 4 o'clock down in the Joint Appropriations Room to go over the budget and prepare for presentation of the budget to the Senate on Monday. In addition, on Monday morning at 8 a.m., we will meet again in the JAC room to take up Senate File 112, Retirement Center and Pioneer Home; Senate File 116, Retirement Income Security Task Force 2, and Senate File 121, State-Funded Capital Construction 2.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. President. Just a couple of announcements. One is that the Wyoming Republican Party and Laramie County Party have combined their Legislator Appreciation Dinner and their Lincoln Day Dinner together. And legislators receive free admission, and spouses of legislators receive reduced price tickets. That's a week from today. If you're interested in going, please contact or let Darlene Gallegos, who is the leadership secretary, know. And there may be some way that we can also help with helping spouses get in there if they would like to attend with you without having to pay. So anyway, if you'll do that. And then the other thing, Mr. President, is Larry's service right now is scheduled for Wednesday at 10 a.m. at Wheaters Ponds. We'll try and figure that out. Well, obviously, Wednesday is the second reading on the budget bill. We'll try and figure that out. There's some options. We could come in early and stay a little bit later if we want to dismiss, or we could send a small delegation. But obviously, we'll be working that budget bill, and it's important that we do. Your everybody's vote is important on the amendments as we go through there. And also, Mr. President, as we go through next week, we will work a little bit of general file every day. We're not going to, we'll work a little general file, and then we'll go into the budget bill. So we may switch things up on schedules, kind of like we did last year,
to do that, but we've got to keep this working. We only've got a few days, and we've got to keep this moving along. So we'll appreciate some flexibility and some patience with us next week while we try and work through some of these things. Thank you.
Yeah, the other thing, Mr. Majority Floor Leader, I believe last day for Committee of the Whole in the House of Origin is next Friday.
That's
as well as third reading on the budget bill. And the last day for bills out of committee is Tuesday or Thursday the 22nd, just for everybody's information. Okay, any other announcements? You heard the motion. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion carried. Safe travels, everyone. We are adjourned until 10 a.m. Monday, February the 19th.
Bonsai.